Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Which English words are secretly Spanish?
What do armadas and armadillos have in common?
And why do some Spanish speakers in España appear to have a lisp?
From the influence of Iberia to the animals of the Americas and well beyond, we are examining Spanish words in English on this episode of Words Unraveled.
Bienvenido to another Words Unraveled. I'm Rob Watts from the YouTube channel Rob Words.
And soy Jess Zafaris, author of etymology books, including Useless Etymology. And today we're talking about Espanol.
Yeah, we are. See, Jess. We're talking about Spanish and its influence on English, which is, you know, largely about vocabulary that has slipped into English from Spain, from various places in the world, actually.
Spain and the Americas, because we have these different routes where Spanish crossed the ocean and then came through many Central and South American countries.
Yeah, we talk a lot about the transatlantic divide in English, but there's very much one in Spanish too, which we will get into, because there are also differences in the Spanish spoken in those two places, and like quite sort of big differences that you can really sort of point to. So we'll get into that, but let's talk about what we like to talk about here, the etymologies of some words that we use that actually do bring them over from either Spain or from usually the Americas, right? More often than not otherwise. Should we start in the old world, though? It just feels chronologically like it makes more sense.
I think that makes the most sense, too. And in any case, many of these words that came through South and Central America were also borrowed from indigenous people who lived there and had nothing to do with Spanish before the Spanish arrived.
Yeah. It's a complicated story, but we are going to make it less complicated for you where we can. It's actually, I think, easier to find words that came into English from Spanish, your side of the Atlantic, than it is my side of the Atlantic. But we do have sort of historic words like armada, for example, which is used to just describe a general fleet of ships now. It can be, but most famously, the Spanish armada. Jess, did you just raise your hand?
I did, because we also have armadillo, which is...
Yes, we do.
The little armored one.
Yeah, so armada just means an armed unit, an armed force. It's, etymologically speaking, the same as army. Really, army is just a word we get from French, and it's an armada is kind of the Spanish equivalent of the word armée from French. But also, if you put that cute little diminutive from Spanish, you get armadillo, which is little armored one.
Very similarly, this is less cute, I suppose, but we also have the words for war and then guerrilla that we've adopted as well, which is a little war.
That is a very good link, because that is also a word that does enter English from Spanish in Spain, very specifically during the Peninsular War, which took place between 1808 and 1814. The guerrilla. Fighters were sort of ad hoc Spanish bands of peasants and the like who were also fighting on behalf of Spain as well as the conventional forces. And that word enters English, as does the word junta around the same time, or junta, as it sometimes gets pronounced in English, which were the sort of controlling councils, I think, of the regions. And that word really takes off during the same Peninsular War. So we get those words because of Napoleon, ultimately, because he's the guy that's stirring things up.
You know what's cool about guerrilla is that it is a Germanic word, which is not true for many of the words that we'll discuss, because Spanish is a Romance language, but we have some Germanic words in there too.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, haven't we? How the French guerre and the English war are both sort of Germanic words for the same thing and have exactly the same roots. But a lot of these words that you do find in Latin languages are actually left over by the Franks. But as well as the sort of historical words, we have words like sherry.
Oh, yes.
You have to attribute to Iberia, because Jerez is in Spain, and originally sherry referred to the white wine that was made in that region. It's called Jerez de la Frontera nowadays. Yeah, but now we talk about the fortified wine that's made in that region, and we call it sherry because that is a nice sort of anglicization of the name of the place. But it actually, if you look at the word written down, doesn't look very much like sherry at all.
No. You know what? What also blew my mind that in researching this episode that is related to this is that the word cork is also from Spanish.
What? No. How?
Okay. So in the 1300s, a species of oak tree that was native to Iberia and North Africa and was used for lots of purposes was transported throughout Europe. And in Spanish, it was called alcorca, I think.
And it's, I think. We should just put I think after every fact. I should,
honestly. Spanish skills, very low. Etymology skills, medium high.
Oh, you lost confidence in your pronunciation, is that it?
Yes, yeah, yes,
neither of us are going to nail any of these pronunciations. Let's get that out of the way. I mean, I'm not quite as bad as I was with the Arabic, but I'm still pretty bad.
Well, anyway, the root here is the Latin quercus, which means oak or like cortex. It's also related to that word, which was also originally a word for bark.
I like these surprising ones that have come from Spanish, like sort of a lot further back. We'll get into some more of those because I know you've got a little list of them that you said you're going to treat me to. I'll just reel off a few more that we specifically get from Spain, and then we're going to talk more about what's going on your side of the Atlantic. But there are certain cultural phenomena in Spain, like the siesta, which is a word that we call it an afternoon nap, a siesta. But do you know that comes from the Latin for sixth?
Ooh.
Because a siesta was traditionally taken at the sixth hour of the day. So the hottest point. If you imagine, you know, your baseline is getting up at 6 a.m. 6 hours later is midday. It's the hottest time of the day, although it's not actually, is it really? But theoretically, that's when you have your siesta, which is from the Latin sexta. Yeah, just sexta, which is where siesta comes from. Incidentally, there's a similar story, sidebar here, behind our word noon, because our word noon comes from the Latin for nine. Noon is supposed to be the ninth hour of the day. So actually about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it should be, but it's ended up being the middle of the day. Also my favorite little facts. And another word that I found came from Spanish culture is aficionado.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously, sounds well Spanish. Obviously, a Spanish word. It essentially means someone who's affectionate for something. But the first people to be described as aficionados, sort of, you know, or at least to gain that label in any sort of real sense, are amateur bullfighters.
Ooh.
Or bullfighting fans. Yeah. So, you know, in the same way that amateur, I think, quite literally implies that you're doing something for the love of it. Well, aficionado is the same thing. So if you are an amateur bullfighter, you are doing it for the love of the bullfighting rather than for money. You are therefore unprofessional. You are amateur.
Does that mean that it's related to the word affection?
It's directly related to the word affection.
Ah, that's so cool.
Yeah, exactly. Again, this is going to change how I use the word aficionado now, because
yeah.
I've always thought of it as being sort of like expert, but really it's not about expert. It's being devoted to something, to having a real love for it. And yeah, the first aficionados were really into bullfighting. Chink great. One thing that you're really good on is the Spanish words that came from Arabic and then we ended up with them.
Much like the English words that come from Arabic, they tend to have that either an assimilated form or just straight up that definite article al on the front. So we've got like the Spanish word for olive oil is from Arabic. It's azeite, I think, but similar words along those lines.
Because it's easy to forget, or maybe many people don't know that Spain, or at least parts of Spain, were Muslim for 800 years there or thereabouts, from the 700s through to the late 1400s. Large part of it was, yeah, essentially Arab. So they spoke Arabic in there. And that means that a lot of Arabic words, they seep into modern Spanish.
A neat thing here is the word alpaca, which you would think, like, that sounds like it could be an Arabic word, but it is, we got it from Spanish, but it's probably from an Incan Quechua word meaning yellowish red, and it would be something like paca, and that would be like the common coat color for the animal. And the al was probably tacked on based on the assumption that it might have something to do with Arabic, or like it was added to it. A similar thing happened to the word almond, which is from the Greek amygdalos, but the al bit was added in Spanish on the assumption that it had something to do with Arabic.
Oh, no way. So the story there with the alpaca, it mirrors, or almost it sort of mirrors insofar as it does completely the opposite to what happens with albatross, because yes. Our word albatross comes from Alcatraz, which is an Iberian Spanish word for a pelican.
A pelican.
Which in turn comes from the Arabic, and I'm going to say it wrong, Al-Qadus, which means the vase or the jar, is a reference to, you know, that gross bit that pelicans have.
Ooh.
Yeah. Anyway, that gets bastardized, for want of a better word, in English from Alcatraz to albatross, perhaps influenced by alba, which is the Latin for white.
Ooh.
So we call this white bird an albatross rather than an Alcatraz. And we haven't even mentioned the prison yet.
Right. One of the potential Arabic words it came from is al-ghatas, meaning the diver.
Ah, that works as well, doesn't it? I like mm-hmm. that theory. A couple of more with the alfalfa. That's comes to us from Spanish, but ultimately from Arabic, and alcove as well, which meant like a dome or a vault in Arabic. But those are just a handful of the words that we get from Spanish in Spain.
Another animal that begins with al here is the alligator, which we got from the Spanish phrase el lagarto, which again, not like faux Arabic.
Yeah.
And beginning on that word.
It's not from the Arabic at all, right? Is it?
Originally, it was the lagarto de Indias, which is the lizard of the Indies, which would be the reptiles that they saw in the Americas. So the, you know, the alligators over there.
Alligator just means the lizard.
The lizard. Yep.
And lagarto is related to the word lizard, right? It's just a, you know, that word takes a different route and it ends up sounding one way rather than the way it ended up sounding in English.
Another way that that word has made its way into English is that the adjective lacertus, ending in O-U-S in English, was once a word for muscly because it supposedly looked like lizards were crawling under your arm or under your skin, much in the same way that muscle means mousy, as we've
mice said so crawling under your skin. Why ruin something beautiful by saying, oh, it's like you've got critters under your skin?
Right.
Gross. Give us some more animals, more Spanish animals. I like these.
This one was introduced from Spanish, but it is from an Arawakan language, specifically the Taino word for the animal, which is iguana. And these were observed in Central and South America and the Caribbean. This is going to happen a lot. We got the word from Spanish, but it came through the indigenous languages of the Americas. Apparently, sometimes the iguana is sometimes called the pollo de los árboles, the chicken of the trees, for its flavor and because it's high in protein. And that, in some cases, is actually a good thing because iguanas have become quite invasive beyond their native territories in the Americas.
That's like we call pigeons like the rats of the skies.
You're right. One of my favorite things about iguanas in general is that Darwin didn't have very nice things to say about the ones that he observed in the Galapagos. He described it as a hideous-looking creature of a dirty black color, stupid and sluggish in its movements.
Oh.
He also observes them being very skillful swimmers. In fact, I have heard one account, not sure how true, that he continuously chucked one into the sea to see if it would come back to the shore.
And if it didn't, just casual bit of lizard murder.
Well, they are marine iguanas, so they're very much in the water all the time.
Okay. They can hack it.
Most of the time.
Mm-hmm. I like it when, well, not I like it, but it's funny how Europeans have traveled the world slagging off the local wildlife. Like the descriptions of the dodo from Mauritius are really, really mean. You know, this stupid disgusting tasting fat bird, as the Europeans are describing it, as they destroy it. They say it doesn't taste very nice, but they still eat them all.
Speaking anyway. Of which, did we get dodo from Spanish?
It's one of those ones in our Italian show. I mean, we get it from the Dutch, I think. But yeah, it's the Portuguese take on a word from another language. And it's difficult to pin down because Mauritius doesn't have a native population. You know, it's only ever been populated by people that have traveled there from elsewhere in, you know, the past few hundred years. It's a slightly strange one. It might just mean stupid person in Portuguese.
But that's also what it means in English. So
indeed it does. It's not very nice, is it? But they're not around to defend themselves.
Speaking of which, we did get bozo from Spanish, I believe. Unfortunately, it has some dark origins. It was used in the slave trade and was sometimes used to mean someone who speaks Spanish poorly, but also just unfortunately used for people who were perceived as less intelligent in that context. But vaudeville got a hold of it and then turned it into a clown name. Another somewhat sad one, and I'll get these out of the way, is unfortunately the word galoot is also from Spanish and came through the same context. And it was, a galoot is literally a person who is on a little galley, a galley slave.
I don't know that word. What does it mean?
The way I've heard it used in context is you big galoot, and it means someone who's like giant and like awkward, large and clumsy.
Not very nice then.
Not very nice. But back to animals, which are more fun to talk about, more pleasant to talk about. I would love to talk about coyotes, which is a cool one.
Coyote, again, not a Spanish word though, right?
Yeah, and we can use this to get into some words from Nahuatl. So coyote is a Spanish/English evolution of a Nahuatl word, which is coyotl. Both the animal and a god were associated with this word, and the god features heavily in trickster myths and shape-shifting lore, and he has this tendency to outwit and be outwitted by other deities. And so Spanish colonists borrowed it as quixote, which in turn entered English via the American Southwest by the early 19th century. And before that, they were in English called prairie wolves by English speakers who encountered them, even though they only have about like 4% in common genetically with wolves, which is about the same as humans and orangutans.
Again, it's just naming local things, you know, exotic animals after what you know from back home, isn't it? Like a prairie dog, right? Prairie dogs. Probably not very closely related to dogs, I wouldn't have thought.
Definitely not. But one of the things that's interesting about this one is the way it's been pronounced in English throughout the years, because coyote and coyote and quixote have all been options. It's been pronounced coyote and still is in many regions, but coyote is more common among English speakers now, especially, I guess, in the region where I live. It's kind of neat.
That te ending is added to a lot of Nahuatl words by the Spanish, because they can't basically handle the tl at the end, as we would struggle to do in English.
Phonotactics.
As well. So they put a te at the end of it. Yeah, so chocolate is another one. Chocolate becomes chocolate in Spanish once they've picked it up in Mexico, but it actually ends with a tl sound in Nahuatl, the language that it's borrowed from.
It's dropped sometimes entirely too. Like the word ocelot was a Nahuatl term adopted by Spanish colonists, and it originally referred to jaguars, but then it was applied in English to the smaller spotted cat we know now as an ocelot.
Jaguar is a word from Portuguese, but the Portuguese got it from the people living in Brazil at the time.
Tupi Guarani languages.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually worth mentioning the history between Portugal and Spain, particularly in Southern and Central America, because the Spanish and the Portuguese, they basically signed a deal that drew a line around the world going from north to south and then back up again. Right? And the Spanish, everywhere one side of it, it's fair game for them. And the Portuguese, the other side of it, it's all fair game for them. And it basically means that the Portuguese can have as much of sort of Africa and India as they like, but the Spanish get the Americas. But there is just this little sliver of South America that sticks out, that crosses that line. And that is where Brazil is now. And that's why Brazil is this Portuguese speaking exception.
It has the most Portuguese speakers in the world, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. By a long shot. By a long shot. Actually, so here's a mad thing. I think there might be more Portuguese speakers in South America than Spanish speakers in South America.
I think that's probably correct.
Well, that is crazy. Crazy if true.
Big if true.
maybe someone can check that for us and stick it in the comments.
One of the funny things that has happened between Spanish and Portuguese is because they diverged in some like usage and pronunciation differences and a couple other things. There are a number of false friends between them. And I discovered this online. So I would love if someone confirmed for me that like Spanish embarazada means pregnant, while the Portuguese embarazada means embarrassed.
Yeah, it's a false friend with English as well, right? You have to watch out for that.
And then exquisito means exquisite, while in Portuguese, exquisito means strange.
That's interesting. It's a bit like the word peculiar, isn't it? Peculiar can mean special, specific, particular. Actually, those the peculiar and particular are two very closely related words. But peculiar can also mean weird. These two concepts aren't that far apart.
But with cows. Anyway, another one is the Spanish vaso means drinking glass. And in Portuguese, it can mean vase or toilet bowl.
Oh, no. I mean, but again, you can see how all of those happen. They're just vessels.
That means same concept, right?
I would like to go into the differences between Spanish in Spain and Spanish in Latin America.
Let's do it.
Because there are quite obvious pronunciation differences. In Southern and Central America and the Caribbean, you're not going to hear the th sound that sometimes gets described as the Spanish lisp. You heard about this? The old story goes that Spanish people ask for una cerveza and say gracias because a king of old, Ferdinand, he had a lisp and they wanted to copy him. That's obviously nonsense. It's just a sound. So there are three ways of speaking Spanish in this regard. They're known as distinción, which means you have a S sound and a Th sound. An S can make either of those. There's ceseo, which is what is spoken. So distinción is what's spoken in Spain, mostly. They have variations within Spain. You can't just talk about it like that. But you know, if you're hearing distinción, that's what's being spoken in Spain. Ceseo is what's spoken in Latin America, which is where you don't have the Th sound at all. You just have S sounds. So for example, the words that would be caza and casa, so that's hunt and home, in Iberian Spanish, castellano or Castilian Spanish, as it's known, there's a differentiation between those. But in South America, where they use this ceseo, caza and casa are both pronounced the same as casa, casa. So hunt and home are homophones in Latin America in a way that they're not in Spain. And then there's another one, which is ceseo, which is you can find in some parts of Andalusia, where they th, even the what would normally be a s sound. So you'd have gracias, not just gracias. But the reason that you have the ceseo in Latin America is that the people that traveled from Spain primarily across the Atlantic were from Andalusia, but back then they had this ceseo there. So in Andalusia and in the Canary Islands, they didn't have this separation, this distinción between the th and the s sound. Because that was sort of the big sort of naval area where a lot of the shipping went, that's the pronunciation that traveled across the Atlantic. All right. I think that's worth talking about.
It absolutely is. That's amazing.
The fun story about the king isn't true. The differences are quite interesting. It is not a lisp. It is a very well defined difference between a s and a th sound.
Yeah, the like emblematic example that I would immediately associate that with is Barcelona versus Barcelona.
Exactly. If an English person says Barcelona, they sound pretentious. But I don't know how that name is pronounced in Catalan, and they're proudly Catalan in Barcelona. But in Castilian Spanish. Yeah, it is. It's Barcelona. You've got Zaragoza as well. Sevilla, that are pronounced with this th sound. There are also grammatical differences, like quite key ones. For example, in Latin America, usted is used as the informal you in a way that it's not used in Spain. In Spain, they're more likely to use tú, you know, like tú, as it's written. But if you use that in Latin America, it can seem a little bit over informal. It can be almost rude if you're not using it to someone very close to you. So usted is like the safest pronoun, second person pronoun to use in Latin America, whereas it gets used much less in Spain. And Spain also has a vosotros, which has been all but lost in Latin America, which is another, it's an informal plural form of you. But in Latin America, they go for ustedes instead. I think I've got that all right. Again, correct me below if I haven't, but I think I've got that right.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money at Menards.
We should talk about the ways that many Latin American and Spanish terms ended up in Northern American place names on the Western frontier in particular. Many of our Spanish place names, cities like Los Angeles and whatnot, are from Spanish. And it's because there was a good deal of drama between the Spanish and existing Americans during the age of westward expansion. We had Spanish-American War. We had a number of other conflicts that ended up determining who controlled areas like California and New Mexico and Texas and the Alamo and whatnot.
It's possible that Europeans watching this won't be fully aware of the fact that Mexico did stretch up into a lot of the territory that is currently part of the United States.
Mm-hmm. A good deal of the West was controlled by the Spanish for a good long time before Northern European Americans started heading in that direction.
And this is a fecund time for Spanish words entering English, because on the frontier, they're sort of rubbing up against each other, but also they're sort of hanging out doing the same things, like being cowboys or being buckaroo.
I was going to say caballeros, but yeah.
I like caballero is good as well, isn't it? Yeah, so buckaroo is from the Spanish vaquero, which means a cowboy, right? And I'm sort of hesitating on the pronunciation there, because this is another thing that I've only just learned, is that V and B basically pronounced exactly the same in Spanish. The Spanish word that becomes the English buckaroo is spelled with a V, as in it's related to the French for cow, vache, you know, these words associate vaccination, or these cow-related words. You also have vaquero or paquero, which gives us buckaroo.
Yeah, American spaghetti westerns don't really reveal the fact that most cowboys, as we would know them, were Hispanic.
It's not my biggest gripe with the Westerns in terms of sort of history and relations between certain groups.
Speaking of the people who were cowboys and caballeros and whatnot, I need to remember the exact flow of horses in the Americas, because most Mustangs in particular in the Americas are descended from Spanish horses, is my understanding. I might need a refresher on that one. But Mustang is originally from the Spanish mestango, which means stray animal. But there's some wild history here too.
Oh, wild. Very good.
I mean, that is...
I'm not going to let that one go.
Running free. In any case, the word meant stray animal, but they are named after the Mesta, or the Honrado Consejo de la Mesta, which means the Honorable Council of the Mesta, which was an association of livestock owners that protected lands and migrations and rights pertaining to their flocks and herds in the 14th century in Spain. Mesta is supposed to be from the Latin word mixed, which also describes the horses, but like accurately, but it is in the original context of the Honorable Council of the Mesta, it described annual assemblies who came together to divide up strays among herds and flocks and sort of the common ownership of the animals and the collective management of them. So this got ported over to American horses, which because correct me if I'm wrong, but a wild horse would not be called a Mustang outside of the Americas, right?
No, it wouldn't. But also Spanish has another word for a wild horse, which is bronco. Bronco also means untamed. It would be a caballo bronco, would be an untamed horse. But we've just taken the bronco bit to describe specifically an untamed horse as well, running wild.
One word you see in frontier, by no means exclusively, but one word you see in frontier-like contexts tends to be the word Sierra. It appears in the names of mountain ranges and things like that. And I actually didn't know that it means saw.
Like,
because it's like a jagged mountain range. Sierra.
That makes so much sense.
Saw. Isn't that fascinating? And so
that's
good. Related to words like serrate too.
Okay, I've got another one of these. This is going to hopefully astound you in exactly the same ways you've just, well, you probably already know it. Canyon. Canyon means exactly the same as cannon. The word is, it's the same as the word cannon.
Is it because it's like a tube? A cannon is
exactly.
A tube and it's like, oh yeah, that's cool.
It means tube. I love this. And canyon's got that fun little, in Spanish, tilde on top. The letter is actually called an ñe, right? The N with the little thing on it that you also see in Espanol. But that started off as another N. So double N's. Scribes started, you know, getting a little bit lazy or trying to save space. They take the second N, they put it, or maybe they take the first N and put it on top of the second, but whatever. And then that gets sort of reduced until it just becomes a sort of squiggle. So for example, año, which means year, would have been written A-N-N-O, but then over time it gains this little squiggle. The N becomes an ñe, and año is just now spelled A-N-Y-O. And canon, our word canon, is C-A-N-N-O-N, and canyon is C-A-N-Y-O-N in Spanish. And our word canyon with that Y in it is just us phonetically spelling out the Spanish word.
That's extremely cool. In English, we would call that a tilde,
yeah.
Which is, it's from the Latin word titulus, which means heading or superscription. So it's a little hat.
Like title.
Mm-hmm, exactly. That's also the origin of the word tittle.
Tittle.
Which would be the dot on an I or a J.
Oh, we've got metathesis. That's one of our favorite things there between tilde and tittle.
Yay. Oh, we do. Look at that.
Oh, love a little bit of metathesis. Rodeo. Rodeo is a good one.
Oh, good one.
Rodeo.
Yeah.
It means an enclosure originally. So it's related to words like round. Essentially, it's a place where things have been rounded up is a rodeo.
And now it's a place where you get flung off a horse.
Yeah. Have you ever been to a rodeo?
I have been to rodeos before, mostly in the context of like, there are like livestock shows and agricultural events and things around. But I lived in Colorado for some time and they had a big rodeo.
Have you ever been on a bucking caballo bronco?
No, I've just been on a non-bucking one.
Oh, yeah, that's good. I don't think that's more than I have.
Actually, that's not true. I have nearly been bucked off a horse once, but not, I don't think it was a bronco or a Mustang.
So here's a transatlantic difference in English. Lasso and lasso. Do you
what?
Know how we pronounce lasso, lasso in English?
Why?
I honestly, I cannot explain it to you because it does not reflect the Spanish. I don't know why we do that. It's from the Spanish lazo, lazo. So it's with that, the th sound from Iberian Spanish, from Castilian Spanish. And that lazo becomes lasso in Latin American Spanish. And it is directly related to
Lace.
Yeah, exactly. So lathor means a string, a cord, and lace is ultimately a material made out of string and cord.
You know what two words have some funny things in common is the words piña and piñata, which they're from the same thing, which means pine cone. And it's also why we say pineapple while the rest of the world says ananas for that word, that fruit.
Yeah, because again, naming an exotic thing after something that's more familiar, right? A pine cone.
In English, we also called a pine cone a pineapple because it was like a fruit on a pine tree, or the closest thing it had to a fruit. And then in the age of colonization of the Caribbean in the 1660s, when English and Spanish people encountered these spiky fruits, they thought they looked like big pine cones, but they just compared them to that. And so Peninsular Spanish uses piña for pineapples, and I believe other regions of Spanish as well, which is why you have like the piña colada drink. But a lot of other Spanish speakers use ananas.
And piñata, how does that get its name?
Yes, piñata is from the Latin piña, meaning pine cone. But in Mexican Spanish, piñata meant jug or pot, probably based on the shape of it.
I thought it was going to be, because it dangles or something
yes.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Again, we don't really have the piñata thing over here in Europe. One more, bonanza.
Bonanza!
Nice.
Excellent.
Frontier style word. Yeah, bonanza. A Spanish word for like some good weather or prosperity from the Latin bonus, from which we get bonus. I've already told you this, but I realized it during the Winter Olympics because I was watching the French coverage with my wife. That in French, and it's obviously it comes from Latin, as well as bonus, they have malus as well for when you have points deducted. Hmm. You know, like if you fall over while you're ice skating,
hey.
You do like a really good move, you get extra points, that's your bonus. But if you fall over, they take some points off you, and that's a malus, which I think we could do with. That's a good word.
Why I think that's a good that? Word. We should absolutely do that. A surprising word that I did not know was introduced to English via Spanish is the word demarcation.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, you would think I was just
not expecting those syllables out of your mouth at the end of that sentence at all. You could have given me my entire lifetime and I've never got to demarcation. Go on.
So, yes, it is. It is also just a Latin-derived word that it sounds like. But we got it, and we wouldn't be using this word if not for, in 1737, we adopted the Spanish linea de demarcación, or the Portuguese version of that word, which was the line laid down by Pope Alexander VI on May 4th in 1493 that divided, as we have mentioned, the New World between Spain and Portugal.
Oh.
That was the original line of demarcation.
Fantastic.
I forgot to bring this up earlier.
Can we dance over to a few dances? Because we do have quite a few dances that have got Spanish names, and they're usually from Latin America, from the Caribbean. Aren't they? Salsa, which just means sauce. That's a weirdly modern name because it's a weirdly modern dance from the 1970s. Presumably just called because it's sort of saucy, a bit spicy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I like the
dance must go back much further, but the name for it.
Right, because salsa just means
the 1970s.
Salted, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's related to all those words like salary that we like to point out. You know, it all just means salt, getting paid in salt or whatever. Yeah. Precisely. And salad. Salad was originally salted something, you know, salted meats. It could be salted meats. It could be salted anything. So yeah, salad, sauce, salsa, salt, all related words.
Another dance, which I spent like a day trying to understand this, but because I put it in one of my books, but I had to wrap my head around flamingo. And therefore I had to wrap my head around flamenco. Both of them in Spanish and Portuguese mean flame-colored from the Spanish flama. But whether flamingo is a relative of the dance called flamenco or not is unclear. Both of them contain flashy, fiery things. Like the flamingo is pink and red, and then the flamenco dance it's flashy. The clothing that goes with it looks very flashy and splashy and beautiful. In Spanish, though, the name of the dance was also once the demonym, meaning a person from Flanders, as well as a word for the dances performed by Romani people in Andalusia. And the reasoning is super weird and confusing.
Well, it's equivalent to the word Flemish, isn't it? Flamenco. I think you can tell me if I'm wrong about this, but you know how travelers tend to get called in localities by the name of people from a distant locality. I mean, it's why we have sort of Romani as a name.
Yes.
Gypsy as well means people from Egypt, essentially. And I thought maybe, and I think I read that the reason they were called Flemish was just Flanders was somewhere far away. The Spanish did control Flanders as well. It was part of their empire at the time.
They have perhaps been conflated because both cultures were associated by the Spanish with dancing and colorful clothes, though they were very different, or because the Spanish used words pertaining to Flemish people as just that catch-all for foreigners, as you said.
Flamenco is one of those words that the more you research it, the less you think you know about it.
Oh, it's terrible. I writing a paragraph about
reading
that was
reading that bit of your book for some clarity.
It's only like 5 sentences long, and I was like, I don't know how to shrug this in the right direction.
But I definitely should have mentioned that when I was talking about, you know, cultural words from the Iberian Peninsula that entered English that way, because the rest of the dances are all from the other side of the Atlantic, like tango, which is from Argentinian Spanish, but originally the name of like an African South American drum dance, because you obviously have this coming together of African cultures from enslaved people who were taken over to the Americas and the Spanish people, you know, descendants of the Spanish people who arrived there. Rumba, another one as well. Cuban Spanish means party or spree, but sort of further etymology uncertain. Thought to maybe be related to the word rhombus. Rhombus. It's kind of weird.
No, I kind of like that though.
Yeah. And then you've got the mamba. We get it from Spanish, but it comes from Haitian Creole. But Haiti is only sort of half of the island of Hispania. I think the island's called Hispania? Hispaniola? Hispaniola. The other half of it is the Dominican Republic, which is traditionally Spanish, whereas Haiti is traditionally French. Well, I say traditionally in European eyes. Anyway, but mambo is originally a sort of, according to the OED, a voodoo ritual dance or voodoo priestess. I quote the OED there rather than put that in my own words, because we have a history of getting these traditions wrong.
Merengue is also from Haitian and Dominican Creole. It means a mixture. And it's also related to the word meringue, like the sweet dessert. It's a little unclear about why the dance came to be called that, but I mean, it makes sense to me.
I wonder if it's related to like mélange then, because you can imagine the r and the l sounds swapping around like they do between languages, can't you? Mélange becomes merengue. I'm done for dances. I don't know that many.
Excellent.
That's my dances. Are we dancing towards the end of this episode?
I think we are dancing toward the end of this episode. It has been...
Lambada. Oh, no, is that one? Should I have looked up Lambada? Oh, never mind. No, forget it. Forget I said it.
We've danced all over English topical areas in which Spanish has influenced us. There is a great deal more, though, and I'm sure I would love to learn about more from people who are watching this.
Yeah, thank you very much for watching. We do welcome your comments and extra information. So do leave it below if you're watching this on YouTube. If you're listening, then head over to YouTube and find the video there. I always put a link to the video version of the podcast in the show notes in the podcast. So, you know, indulge me this time because I'm not sure if anyone's ever clicked that link, but the link is there. The link is there. But for now, let's say hasta luego. See you later.
We'll see you next time on Words Unraveled.